You're listening to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast brought to you by Nottinghamshire Live.
Hello and welcome to Garibaldi Red, the Nottingham Forest podcast from Nottinghamshire Live. My name is Matt Davis, hosting as normal, and we're joined this week by former Reds midfielder Guy Moosey to talk about his career and what he's up to these days in work and in life. Guy, hello, how are you?
I'm very good, and you. Nice to see you, and thank you for the invite.
Oh, no, thank you for coming on. I'm very grateful for you to come on and talk to people about your career, being a popular former player. I wanted to start, before we get to your time at Forest, I'd be interested to hear about your early life and how you came into football. I mean, did you always think you were going to be a footballer? Were you kind of the best player on the park or not as a kid?
As a kid, I was one of the best in my neighborhood, that's for sure. But I never like really thought about being a professional footballer. I think it's most likely, you know, I believe that it's a popular sport, which means you don't need to have money, for example. You just have, you grab a pair of socks, you're rolling around, you play football, you grab an empty bottle of water, you kick on it. So for me, it was like just, you know, when you hang out with friends and then you just want to play at something, it was football. So it was more building up the love like that when I was young, instead of thinking that you want to be professional athlete, because when you're 5 years old or 6 years old or whatever, you don't even know what it is. And especially at the time, maybe nowadays people are more aware, but because, you know, all the financial that they are behind this football. But at the time, it wasn't that big, I would say. So it was just like, you know, doing for fun with friends.
What was your route into professional football then? Did you kind of stumble into it? Did someone spot you and just give you a chance to come and train with a club?
It came late a little bit. For me, I think about 15, 16, because in France, a lot of people, you know, going into academies really early, like 13, something like that. And when you used to go at the time at 15, 16, it was kind of a little bit late. And so I was playing with friends, and a lot of people knew that in my neighborhood I was with my cousin, two of the best players in our generation. And they come to my mom and they say, you know, there is like an academy team that's one of my friends. And then his parents come to my mom and say, you know, our son playing for an academy team, and it would be good to go on a trial. So I went on a trial with my cousin, and you went from there.
How did you end up in Nottingham then? Because we've had former players on here before, and they often say, oh, I knew all about Forest through the European Cup wins and the great history of the club. You're the first player from a different country we've had on. So were you fully familiar with Forest's history, and was it easy to come here?
Not at all. And to be fair, I've said it many times, is to be truth, I didn't want to come to Nottingham. I had a brilliant season with a second division team, my former team, Angers. And at the time, I've got a lot of first team, I would say, Premier League team in France, La Ligue 1. Some good teams wanted me. And but it was kind of, I was reaching a circle while I've played for the club for 6 years. I went through injuries, came back from injuries, being one of the best players in few seasons. And I was reaching a time that I needed a fresh and new challenge. And Nottingham Forest came to me, and I remember seeing it on the paper while being in vacation. And my agent didn't even talk to me about that opportunity, but I was like, I'm not really interested, because I wanted to play. My target was go first in a Premier League team in France, then maybe go to see abroad. But the team that I was supposed to sign to was Lille at the time, but the manager, maybe you must know him, it's a French manager that was at Southampton, which is a Club Puel, and he was also...
Oh yeah, Leicester as well, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So he was desperate to sign me, and in the same transfer window, he signed for Lyon at the time. But the big Lyon, you know, Lyon that used to win the title every season. So then the recruitment was to another level. And so the team of Lille were waiting for the new manager to come and then to finalize all the transfers. But I was reaching a time that I came back to the preseason with my former team Angers, and I was like, no, I need to go now, because if I wait too much, I don't want to be in between. My mind want to be in another team, and then myself, I want to still commit it to Ange, because I'm professional. And then from that, doing a bad preseason, which is going to lead for a bad beginning of the season and no transfer. So I was like, I need to find a team right now. And Nottingham Forest was the opportunity that was proper ready to, you know, to put the money on the table and make the transfer happen. And I remember it's David Frio at the time, which he was a former player at Forest. I think during his last spell, his last year, he become a little bit like a scout for the club. So he come to watch me with Keith Burt many times. And at the time, they asked me to come to Nottingham to visit the city, to visit the football club, and another proper ID. And when I first came, it's so weird because I feel home straight away. I feel comfortable. You know, when you never left your country and you have this apprehension of what's going to happen, new country, I don't speak English, blah, blah, blah. And but finally, I just came here and was pretty good. And I watched the last game of the season when Forrest got promoted with the goal of Julian Bennett when he did this crazy tackle and the free kick of Luis Magugan, and I think it was Chris Commons also scored one goal. And I always say I remember that. So when I came to Nottingham Forest to have a discussion with Colin Calderwood, which was the manager at the time, so I was with my agent, and then so they wanted to show me the atmosphere of the city ground, the number of people that was there. And it was quite kind of crazy because I was in second division. In my mind, I was like, okay, I play in second division team in France. This is a third division team because I didn't know much about the club. And they just got promoted. So I was thinking, okay, so it could be like a third division team in France that game promoted me in the second division. And then I've seen the last game of the season with 30,000 people with the atmosphere that was crazy. I was like, whoa. Because at the time, one of the big clubs in France calling FC Nantes went down to the championship, so the second division in France. And my former team, Angers and FC Nantes, is not Nottingham and Derby, but then they're really close by. They're like 45 minutes, so it's a kind of a derby. But then when we play against each other this season before I signed for Forest, it was like 12,000 people. And then for me, it was crazy. It was like I played the final of the World Cup with a lot of people. And then I come and I watch this game. It's like 13,000 people for a third division team that game promoted. I was like, I can't, that's real. And I remember seeing the tackle of Andrew, because in France, we were like, okay, if you come to England, it's a physical football. And the lower you go, and then the less footballistic it is, it's more athletic. So when I heard the second division, I was like, it won't be good football or whatever. And I've seen the tackle of Julian Bennett. I was like, whoa. And I elbowed my edge and I was like, I'm not coming there. So I went back. So after the visiting the city, but I was really impressed about the facilities also, about the pitch. Because in France at the time, we didn't have like really good pitch, but the training pitch were even better than our official football matching pitch at Angers. I was like, wow, that's amazing. And so we went back to France with my agent, and I was like, okay, now I need to think about it. I was like, nah, I don't want to go. And I asked the question, let's say I asked for 20 people between ex-coaches, friends, family members. And then when I start some of my family members heard in the news that, oh, Nottingham Forest wanted to sign me. And they were like, whoa, that's a huge club. You don't even know. They won twice the Champions League and everything. I was like, okay. And like I grew up always being like the type of player that never watched football. So you could have mentioned me, for example, I tried to exaggerate it a little bit, but then Pelé or Maradona, I would have said, oh, who is that? But not those big ones, but then some of them, you know. And then the reason why it was because basically all I wanted for me, it was playing football. So I didn't know much about the history of Nottingham Forest. But then when my family members told me that they won twice the Champions League, I was like, to win twice the Champions League in the road, the only one in the history at the time, must be a big club. Then I remember when I came here and I've seen all the fans when they got promoted. I was like, okay. And so I went back home and I spoke with many people, family members and stuff like that. And I wanted to wait only to have only one person that would have said, no, don't go in there. It's no point. Then I would have said to my agent, no, I don't want to go there. But everybody said, oh, you will enjoy it with your type of football, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay. So I came back to the preseason. I'd done 2 days in the preseason. I was like, okay, I need to make my decision. And anyway, I wanted to have a fresh start somewhere else. And this is how I decided to come to Nottingham Forest.
What was it like moving? I mean, what age would you have been? 21, 22?
22, I think, something like that, yeah.
So what was it like moving as a young man to a foreign country? I don't know how good your English was then and if you came with family or anything, but it's a big step to take, isn't it, as a person?
The funny part is when I came to do the first day of the pre-season, when I took the flight to Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris to come to East Midlands Airport, Hamza Ben Sherif was at the airport also because he was coming back to the pre-season. And I was looking at him and he was looking at me. And I remember his face was familiar. And I remember because one of the academy team that I play in Paris, Hamza was playing for the same team, but he was a youngster. He was like 2 to 3 years old, younger than me. And but then straight away, I was like, I remember this face. And he came to me because he seen on the news that I signed for Forest and he remembered me. And then for me, it was a big relief because I was like, okay, I'm not alone. I know someone that speaks French, someone from the same neighborhood, I would say, in Paris. So then you're going to help me to be able to feel home, you know, in Nottingham. And so it went pretty well, to be fair.
What was the dressing room like compared to a French dressing room in terms of the culture and the kind of sense of humour and settling into that? Was it a big difference between Angers and Nottingham?
Not really. I think there is banter everywhere because I even been to Helsinki, which is, again, a different country. But I think it's international, you know, it's like people come to the dressing room, want to have jokes. And, you know, it's one of the difference, I would say, that I never had to experience that. But it's I came as a foreigner player. And I would say at the time in France, we didn't have that many foreigner players. So I don't know the way we would have acted to introduce one of them. Someone that coming from abroad and not talking the same language, etc., etc. But then what I can be thankful and blessed, it's that the teammate that I had, they always welcome me at best. So try to help me in any type of ways to feel comfortable, you know, to not, let's say, laughing at me because of my French accent or because I couldn't speak English or whatever. You know, I remember Chris Cohen or even Kelvin Wilson or Julian Bennett. When I tried to speak English and I mentioned the wrong word, they were coming to me like, but really, calm. No, you're supposed to say like that. And I think sometimes French people, sometimes we like laughing at people. And I believe that maybe if it would be the opposite, and then someone would have come to the French dressing room and try to speak French, maybe we would have tried to laugh at him because he couldn't speak properly. And I really appreciate that. And he helped me to try to make the effort and speak English.
How did you adapt to the football then, Guy? Because Colin Calderwood wanted to play a certain way. He must have told his players what he wanted them to do. And you don't speak the language too well. How big a challenge was that in the early days?
I think the football for me is simple, but it's true that some of the automatism that I had in France, because the French football is really like mathematics. So from young age to become professional, it's almost at the time, especially at the time, all the teams were used to play in 4-4-2, for example. So you have to just decide which position you're playing. And then in France, it was almost like, as soon as I've got the ball in this position, I know that this player will move in this way. This play, let's say I receive the ball from the right back, I know that the striker will move like this. I know that the right wing will move like this. I know that the number 10 will move like that. So even before I receive the ball, I know my body position. I know how I'm going to pass the ball. And then when I defend, it was the same thing. We used to defend in zone and not like individuals. So those little things make a difference, I think, in the way that I needed to adapt, because everything that was for me automatic. I knew that, okay, the opposite team moving in like that, I know that, for example, Chris Cohen will be there to cover. And then suddenly, no, because we're playing in individual marking. So then Chris Cohen is not where he was supposed to be in my mind. So this is the way that I needed to adapt and understand the physiology of Colin Calderwood, and then of the player also, because I remember some of the action for me, it was so clear that you have to do that. And then it was no chance someone could have told me, no, even if Colin Calderwood would have told me that, no, this is not what you're supposed to do, I would have said, you're lying. This is not what you're But when you turn around and you see almost all the team believing in something totally different that you've been learning for 10 years, then you're like, okay, I'm going to just shut my mouth and try to adapt it.
You spoke about before you signed, you saw the atmosphere at the ground. Do you recall your debut at the City Ground, your first game, and what it was like? And did you have people over watching from France to see it?
Yes, I think my mom was there, I think, with my sister. And I'm not sure. I think nobody was there. No, I think nobody was there, you know. So, but I remember this game, it was against Reading. It was against Reading when I strike the ball to the head of Sonko.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that was the first game in Sky. And that was my first game for the Man of the Match. It was a really good game. And the atmosphere was brilliant.
I should ask you about your first goal. I bet you don't do an interview where you're probably not asked about your match winner against Barnsley, but what are your memories of that? Because obviously you got sent off after it as well.
Yeah. I'm not a goal scorer, so for me it was like... And I remember Amy Sutton at the time that used to be the secretary, she always told me that, when do you going to score? When do you going to score? Because we have this music, you know, I don't know if it was the Moose is on fire, but she had another music that she wanted to play at the City Ground if I would have scored. I was like, okay, I'm going to score next time. Well, the first season gone and I haven't scored. Then the second season came. I was like, I need to score a goal at some point. And then it's just like the dynamic that we were at the time. I think we were something like five win in a row. And then I'm usually not a goal scorer, and I'm up scoring at the 90th minute, and I just lost it. But then it's because in France also, we don't have, you know, this kind of, we have like a barrier between the fans and the players. And then for me, like, I was like, I remember some action, or I was visualizing some action at the time when some player used to jump on the crowd or whatever, and I thought that I could have done that. But I was wrong.
Oh dear. By that point, Billy Davis was well and truly in charge. I mean, I'm sure the players were disappointed when Colin Calderwood left. But what do you remember of Billy coming in, and how would you describe Billy as a manager? Because all the players I've spoken to love him.
Best for me is, I think Billy Davis is. I see him a little bit as a mentor, you know, because some of the things that he's done. Like, make me, you know, I took it outside football to implement in my personal life. And then for me, it was like, for me, I think he's the best, no, he's, without a doubt, he must be the best manager that I play under, for sure. Because of the whole of his vision, of how he's able, and how he's able to bring the best out of the team or of an individual. He used to analyze a player and know, I would say, the love language of a player. He would know how to talk to Guimoussi and know that if I touch him like that or talk to him like that, he's going to have a positive reaction. But if I talk with Radi, it has to be different. If I talk to Luis McGugan, it will be different. Wes Morgan, it will be different. And he used to know exactly his player and then how to talk to an individual and how to talk to the whole team. And I think it's brilliant.
People talk about his planning and his detail and organisation. I mean, was that second to none then when you were there?
Yeah, I think everything was like it was someone that gave us the mental state to be on every single details. Mm. When you're eating, when you're sleeping, when you're going home, your mindset, everything. He never left any details. And he used to tell us that this is the details, this is what dictate a winner from a loser. And yes, it was amazing to think that way. And I think it's really helped us as a youngsters and then as a young boy that tried to become a man also.
You said he knew how to talk to you. I mean, how did you like to be spoken to? Did you respond well as a player? Some players respond well to being shouted at and told off. Did you respond well to praise and an arm around the shoulder?
Not really. And then it's funny because recently I realized and why I'm so connected to Nottingham Forest and Nottingham, the city and the fans. And then because I understood, I would say, the way I work, I function. And I'm most likely someone like I'm a family guy. And then for me, it most like he used to know how to talk to me to show me that he would put his trust on me. And then, like, I don't put pressure on you, but I know that if I put my trust on you, I can believe in you. And then I'm someone like that. So if you come and say, Guy, I believe in you, I put my trust on you, do this job. Can you do it? If I say yes, I will do it, doesn't matter what. You don't have to put pressure on me. You don't have to shout at me or whatever. If I do something wrong, I will know it. And then if I know that you believe on me to do this, and then I make it wrong, you don't have to shout at me for me to be, sorry for the word, but really pissed. And then he knew that. So he knew how to, you know, to talk to me, to make me feel or make me know that, hey, now this is your duty. I don't want to talk to you. I don't have to motivate you. I want you to do that. Can you do it? I would be like, yes. Okay, see you after the game. And that's it.
You talk about your relationship with Billy being so good, and you've spoken of your love of Forest. I mean, what was your relationship like with the fans then? I mean, when did you know that the fans had taken you to their heart and really liked you as a player?
I would say it's a little bit different. Regarding what I just said, for me it was, and then this is why I think that I was so connected to the ground, is because I felt the passion of the people for the football clubs. For the football club, and then for me it was, we're reaching the same goal. So my goal is to be the best on the field, to be able to win game for the club. And the fan used to come to the stadium because they love the club and they want to see us win. And when we were losing, for example, I could have seen that I was feeling so bad, but I could have seen in the eyes of the fan the same disappointment. So I'm like, okay, now we're in the same page, and then we have to achieve. And then it's not just me being on the field. What I'm going to do on the field will affect the mood of those people. And then when I'm doing bad, they're still supporting me because I'm kind of the one that represents them on the field. But then we all together. And yes, I think this is something that's built up in me, like some love for them. And then something like, kind of, it's an honor for me to be able to represent the club and represent you, and then for you to support me to be there on the field and try to do my best. So this is how I used to see the game, and for me it was like, okay, we live and die together, and I have to give 100% because you would have loved to be in my position just to defend the color of your club, but then I'm the one that has this role. So I need to respect you by doing my best. And I think that in the same time, the fans that were there in England in general, people will judge you by your efforts, by what you try to do, by the fact that you're honest when you play. And my game was like that. I've always been honest. And I think this is why we had a good connection.
Was Forest different to other clubs in your experience then? I know you play for Birmingham, you play for Helsinki and Angers. Was Nottingham Forest different in a way, do you think, or did it stand out?
I think Nottingham, Angers is a bit like that, but I believe that at Nottingham, there is a big history in the club, and it's a big family club. And we can sense that by when I first came with our chairman that passed away, Nigel, every time before pre-season, we used to have like a big party in his one of his mansion not far from Nottingham. And I remember he used to ask everybody to come with their parents, with their child, with their wife. And then we used to spend everything all together. So it was the players, but it was also the groundsman. It was every people from the office in Nottingham. And we were all together, and then we were sharing a time before the preseason. And I remember once, because I came alone, but at that time, I think my mom was supposed to come. And I think she was there or not. My sister used to live in England at the time, and I think she was around this weekend. And I was shy, and I say, my sister will be there. Am I allowed to bring my sister? Because I didn't want it to feel like I bring all my family to something that's not they're not related to the football club. And they were like, no, yes, of course, that's what we're waiting. And then if she have a child, bring the child also and then his boyfriend. And I was kind of shocked, and I was like, okay. And then I've seen, and then I wasn't talking English. I wasn't speaking English, so I was really observing. So all those things, I was just like sit back and observe everybody, and was seeing the connection. Everybody knew each other. Everybody helping each other. And I think it's something that even nowadays you don't see that much because there is new owners. So the DNA of the club sometimes disappeared because the people that has been in the club for years, they're not in the club no more. So it's difficult to find this in some football clubs right now.
Yeah, it felt like back then the club was geared up for the Premier League, that when you finished third and made the playoffs 2 years in a row. I mean, how painful was it that you fell short? So did it feel like that was your big chance then to play in the Premier League?
Yeah, of course. I still have, you know, when we see that we were enduring with the fans and suffering with the fans, I still remember when we lost against Swansea away from home in the second leg of the playoff. I remember coming to the fans. They were in the stadium, and then I was staring at them. We were staring at them, and then we were looking each other in the eyes and didn't know what to say. Could have seen people crying and stuff like that. And then I have no words. And then we were driving back to Nottingham. Nobody was talking in a couch in a bus. And at some point we stopped by services to grab some water or whatever. And some fans were there, crying. They haven't seen us arrived, but then they just like they were crying, and then now suddenly you arrive, and some of them that didn't want to talk to us because it was too painful. Some of them come to us and try to tell us, oh, we're so disappointing. Some of them were mad. It was a mix of feeling, but it was horrible. And then after that, I remember I went back home, and I was in bed. I couldn't sleep. So I used to just watch Sky Sports News, and they were putting the game again. And the game again, I asked to stop the TV, and I couldn't sleep for two to three days, really. But then after that, for a month, I was affected. But for 2 to 3 days, I was like, I can't sleep. I would sleep 1 hour, 2 hours, and I was thinking about it. I was like repeating all the action. We could have done that like this. We could have done this like that. Oh, it was horrible.
What did the club change after that? Because Billy went, Steve McLaren didn't stick around, Sean O'Driscoll, Steve Cotterill, I think you were there when McLeish was there, and then Billy again. Mm. Did you feel the club changing in those last 2 or 3 years at Forest?
Yes, I think things changed because obviously the chairman passed away. But even before that, I think Billy Davis left. And I think potentially maybe one of our mistakes is because we reached the playoff twice in a row, and we were so close to get promoted that maybe unconsciously we believe that doesn't matter what we're going to do. Now we're one of the team in the championship, and we're going to be in a playoff minimum. But it was also some changing in terms of players. Like, I think David McGoldrick left on loan, or he wasn't playing that much. Robbie Finlay was there, yes. Nathan Tyson wasn't there no more. We had a few players. I think Ryan Bertrand went back to Chelsea. Nicky Shirley went back to West Brom, I think it was. We have few new players, and the problem is we have like few players also out of contract. And at the time we were young, and you know, I don't think that the club at the time wanted to invest that much on some of the player that was there out of contract. And the problem is their mind wasn't there either. So for them it was potentially, and I understand, okay, they don't want to sign me a new deal, so potentially maybe I'm gonna play my game, try to do my best, and if you reach the playoff anywhere, or maybe another team will sign me or will sign for another club because I don't have any contract for the next season. So it was really complicated to play with a player that was potentially out of contract in the end of the season and didn't know if they would have stayed with us. So they unconsciously, even though I know that none of them would have said that I tried to be or I was 50%. But if you want to be committed 200%, you have to be committed to the club anyway. So you have to have a contract. And I think that was potentially the problem, and especially when we faced difficulties, because me, I was out of contract when we reached the playoff against Swansea and that year. But then I was playing week in, week out. The team were doing extremely well. The spirit inside the team in the changing room was extremely good. But then when you find some difficulties in the fourth year when Billy David left, it wasn't the same because some people were out of contract, but we were like almost in the bottom of the table. So now you're like, oh, it's not the same energy.
Did you ever have a chance to go? I remember reading Everton were interested in you and Wigan, and I think maybe West Brom teams in the Premier League wanted you. Was that, did you ever have a chance to leave? Was that just paper talk?
I think yes, it was real talk and real discussion with the teams. And up to this day, I don't even know why that didn't happen. You know, sometimes there is things under the in between closed door that we doesn't know. And but then for me, the aim was to say that I would have left potentially as a personal challenge to be able to challenge myself from the Premier League, because this is what was driving me. And this is what was driving me also with my target with Forest, because as I said, my plan was to play for in the Premier League, and my dream was to potentially achieve that with Nottingham Forest. But then, if I would have had the chance to do it with another team, I would have taken the chance for the personal reason, you know, to challenge yourself against the best, etc., etc. But then I had interest for other teams in Championship, but I always say that doesn't matter the money or whatever. I will never leave Nottingham Forest for another Championship team. And when I signed back, when I re-signed my 3-year deal, I have two offers on the table with better money and with sign and fee, and I refused them because I was like, "It's no point for me." I'm like, for me in my mind, I was we lost twice in a row the playoffs, so potentially next year we have to do everything to be automatic promoted. So we were in a good team, so I wasn't expecting to the fourth season to be in the bottom of the league. So I was like, I love the city, I love the fan, I love my friend that I have here now, and my teammate. What's the point to leave with a for another team? While I mean, potentially for me, I was in the best team in Championship or the best club in Championship, so I wanted to achieve that with the fans and the teams and my teammate.
What happened when you did leave Forest then? Because you were so embedded here and so happy here, I guess you wanted to stay. Was this no offer on the table?
Yeah, I think it's the last year was a little bit complicated because it was a lot of I would say drama inside the behind closed door inside the changing room, and then with the chairman also that wanted to do his best, I believe, you know, which is Fawaz. But then we can criticize him as much as we can, but then in the end, he put his money on the table. He done the wrong decision. But then, as human, we make wrong decision. But then, for me, He wanted the best for the club, but he went wrong on the decision that he made. But and then the decision that he made has a huge impact on the change room also. And for me, it was really, really, really complicated because I was thinking that all the things that I love about the club, the team spirit, the family, the family, a family club, were disappearing because of all those things that were happening with Flowers. And that has a huge effect on my mind, and that has a huge effect on my game also. And as much as I didn't want it to leave, I needed also to have a refresh, a fresh challenge, something. I wanted a change. I needed something. And then this is how I ended up in Birmingham City. And as I say, the way that I've been connected to the club, it's because of who I am. And then fighting for the same target, and then working for a football club that we all love potentially. And I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel the same things also in Birmingham. But the history of Nottingham Forest is a little bit special because even when I came, we were a young team, and I think the squad, they were almost together for already 2 years. So I was jumping in a group of with a group of players that I know from a long period of time. While when I arrived in Birmingham, it was like 10 new players or 15 new players from the year compared to the year before. So it's people that is almost like people coming just to play football and then have their own personal goals and not a collective goals. And this is how I felt a little bit. And my adaptation took too long, and then after that I decided to go to Helsinki in Finland because I wanted another break, far from everybody and far from everything. I needed to play again football, be far from everything, and it was really hard, you know, at Birmingham, and then especially because we had to play against Nottingham Forest at the City Ground. Me coming back to the City Ground, going to the changing room of the opposite team, yeah, having to shake hands of everybody that I appreciate or I love, and then I'm like passing the changing room. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to the wrong changing room. Like, where am I going? And then I was on the bench, and I remember going to run on the side to warm up, the fan being happy to see me. But I was like, I'm not fighting for the right thing. Like, I was like, it's almost like my people are there and then they're still giving some love. And then you send me some love, but I cannot give you the love back by fighting for you in the field because I'm going to fight against you. So it was like, it was kind of tricky. It was so bizarre. And yes, and after that I decided, because in my mind also, remember, I set up my mind by saying I will never play for another team that in Championship if it's not Nottingham Forest. And then now I come back to the City Ground, and then I play against Nottingham Forest. While in my mind, I set up my mind that I will never play for another team that Nottingham Forest in Championship. After that, I need to go away.
I want to ask you one more thing about Birmingham in a minute, but picking up on what you said about Forest, Sean O'Driscoll was on here talking about Fawaz, along the same lines as yourself. You know, he put his money where, you know, back into the club. But Sean was saying, you know, he was saying to Fawaz, you're paying these players too much money. Please stop giving out big contracts. Is that what you were kind of referring to there? If it was difficult with dressing room dynamics, and did it change the spirit of the club when all these new players are coming in on huge money?
For me, the money wasn't a big issue because I remember, it's all the matter of how you're going to talk to the player. And then with Fawaz, it was almost like he signed some players and he gave them more than the money, he gave them some power to be potentially in the same level of the manager because he gave them the power to be able to speak directly with him, which was kind of confrontation for a coach because he's like, oh, you're not playing Guimoussi. And then I pick up my phone and I ring Fawaz. I say, I'm not happy. And then because Fawaz was the mentality potentially in the Middle East is different than here in Europe. And the chairman over there, they're really connected with the players also. And then some of the players, if they wasn't happy, they would have picked up the phone and ring Fawaz. And Fawaz would have react like there is no hierarchy. So he would have speak directly to them instead of saying, oh, you have to speak with the manager first. So it brings some conflict in the changing room in the way that some of the players would have said, oh, we have player here that they're different than us because they can speak directly to the chairman. While us, if we have a problem, we have to go through the manager. And in the same time, the manager also wanted to know what's going to happen in his changing room. But then, because sometimes he has to refer it after that to the chairman. But then sometimes the chairman has information even before the manager, because some of the players used to go straight to the chairman. So I think all those things put some really, you know, a bad atmosphere in the changing room, more than, I would say, the money or whatever. Because in the end, we know that in football there is money. And if someone would have come with humility and, you know, just do his job, fair play for him if you have good money. It wasn't we never even talk really. I remember those years when we reached the playoff, we never really talk about the wages or how much do Wes Morgan have or Guy or Lewis. We never talked about it. We were just like focused on the field, try to do our best, bunch of friends, and that's it.
You talk about money. You went to Birmingham and you took a salary off them, but you gave it all away to charity, which is a very unusual move for anyone in any walk of life. Can you tell people, you know, why you did that and what was the thinking behind it?
For me, it was I wanted to go back to the pure love of football and try to say that I'm not. So basically, when I signed there, I signed for 2 to 3 months, I think something like that. And then for me, it was a challenge to take. So at first, money-wise, when I start to negotiate the contract, because I had a good contract at Forest, the club would have was like, oh, you know what, we can't pay the same things. And then for me, it's like, when we started the discussion we started this interview, as I said, I love football more than anything. I really love football. So it's like, now sometimes I play with friends and I'm as happy as when I was playing at Nottingham Forest in front of the fan in the City Ground. And then I hated when a manager used to come to me and talk to me about money. Oh yes, but you know, I want you to come to me. Okay, what type of experience can you bring to the team? This is the formation that I want to play. How can you fit this formation? What do you think? You know, life for me is exchanging and passing your knowledge, you know, your experience. And I wanted to do that. And they come to me most likely about money. And then for me, anyway, I've always been doing things with charity. And for me, it was two things. I wanted to send some money from some charities. And in the same time, it was a message to tell them, maybe my ego, to tell them, stop talking to me about money. Just let, you know, I come in like, I left Nottingham Forest, for example. I left good people that I like here. Now I just want to enjoy football. So don't talk to me about money. Because sometimes they talk to you about money. They say, okay, we're going to pay you that much. And they try to put pressure on you but if you've been paid that much, that means you have to behave like that. And as I say, I'm not someone that they're going to put money on me or give me money and say that because you give me the money, then I'm going to do 200%. Now, if we shake hands and I tell you that, okay, this is what I can do and you ask me to do it, then I don't need the money to give you 200% because it's my word and that's worth more than money. And so I had like a big problem with that at the time when they were talking a little bit about money. And in the same time, that was my way to be able to say, you know what, I don't want your money in a certain way, but you know what, we're going to do something good. We're going to give it to charity because I used to do that. And so this is how that's happened.
You stopped playing when you were about 31. Did you just, I mean, a lot of players stop playing so they just can't get a club or they just get injured. It sounds to me like you play a lot on emotion. I mean, did you just fall out of love with the game for a while there and that had enough?
100%. I think I had the opportunity to play. I think for me, it was like I always wanted to play in Premier League, for example. And for me, it's like I was doing my maths. I'm like, okay, I make a lot of, you know, sacrifice to be able to keep improve, like keep playing at the best level. But then I was seeing that even with the effort you have, the game has been now built up in a certain way that a youngster, when he play, maybe we can transfer him and make money. So it become a business more than, oh, you still have the quality, or you're better than him. You may be better than him, but then because he's younger than you, then the game change and we'd be like, no, okay, give you good, but this one is younger, he can still improve, and then we can still make money by making some transfer. And so as I said, I start to talk with people, and then instead of talking to me about football, they were talking to me about money. Oh, how can you do this? How can you do that? Instead of saying, you know what, we don't have that much money, but this is what we're going, how we want you to fit into the team. Play like this, talk with the youngsters, do this, do that. You have a role. You know, when I start to play football, we have some experienced player, and they were like to give the knowledge, to give the experiences, like in life. You have your parents, or you have the people that are older than you, and they try to give you advice in life. And I think for me, in every job or whatever, or anything in life, it's about going through your own experience and try to help other people not making the same mistake. And so it's something that I was looking for when I was playing football. Okay, at some point I will be able to be the one that's going to tell to people, give them some advices. But then the game changed. And as you say, I was disappointing, and didn't the love of the game, I lost it. I never lost the love of football, but I lost the love of the game.
Yeah, the game on the pitch, you still loved, but everything around it. Yeah. I mean, when you finished playing, it must be a watershed moment where I know you're in business now, but you must think, oh, what the hell am I going to do now? Was it a bit of a crossroads for you in life at that moment then?
Yeah, that was difficult because, but then, you know, I had a really big injury when I started playing football in 2004. So when I was 18, 19. And so I done my ACL. So it's a big injury. And I remember at the time they used to say, oh, maybe you won't be able to play no more, et cetera, et cetera. And then so it built up in my mind like a strong mindset by saying, doesn't matter, I will always get back if I decided to. Nobody going to tell me that I won't be able to play football no more. And then basically from that also, I always be something always been in my mind by saying that, yes, okay, that's great to think like this, that's great to make the effort to not get injured or that big injury that will stop you from playing football. But then if that happened by bad luck, what are you going to do? So since 19, I always thought about what would be next. What would be next? And so when it arrived at that time, I wasn't expecting to stop at that age or to decide to stop playing, because in my mind, I was thinking, I want to challenge myself and go and play until, I don't know, 38 years old, something like that, 40 years old, why not? Because I was thinking, I was watching Ryan Giggs or stuff like that play until 40 years old. I was saying, yes, if they can do that, I can do that. It's just a mindset. I need to set up my mind and I can do it. So when this happened, this situation happened, I have to decide why I'm carrying on playing football or I'm stopping playing football. It wasn't easy.
How did you come to? Well, can you tell people what you do now and how you came into it?
Yes. So funny part is, you know, when I come to England, I understand a little bit the no pain no gain. So. To make you an example, French people, we kind of lazy, you know. So let's say when we are training in France, let's say 9 a.m. on the morning, it was 9 for 9:30. So you have to be in the change room at 9, and the training started at 9:30. All we were doing is the one that will arrive at 8:59 without being caught by the manager and without having a fine. So we have always been like 1 minute, 2 minutes. And then when I came here, it's like, I remember seeing Jamel Lassell or other player or Ben Osborne or whatever. It was, the training was at 10:30 for 11, and they were there at 9 with the academy at the beginning, doing some stretching, doing some exercise. So then, you know, it started to change a little bit my mind. And so basically, when I left Helsinki, I came back to Nottingham with Philippe Montagnier. I wanted to train with them. And in the possibility of signing a new deal, I remember the sport director at the time, Lalou, say to me, yes, we are short of players, or, you know, you may have a deal on the table if things happen and if the manager is happy with it. And one of the training, when the team was off, I asked the fitness coach to go and train, and I trained with them and with him in 1v1, and I damaged something on my knee. So I felt something on my knee. So I went for a scan, and it was just my meniscus. So I just needed like to wash out my knee, and maybe in 4 weeks I would have been back on the field. So when I came back up, and so I went to a friend to do the operation. I came back up at Forest, and Torpy, one of the strength and condition and coach in at Forest, start to work with me with the devices. And so basically, the devices is like a cuff, let's say a cuff. And then basically, he put that cuff around my limb, and he put some pressure on it, like a let's say a blood pressure cuff. And he said to me, okay, now do the exercise. I'm like, what is it? For me, in my mind, it was November. I was thinking, like, maybe if you get back 30 feet before December or before January, at least, maybe you can be potentially signing a new deal or whatever. So I was like, what is it? So he's explained to me something called blood flow restriction training. And so he tried to explain to me a little bit the way it works, and I didn't really picture. So I was like, when he was tuning his head, I was taking it off and putting a lot of normal big weight to be able to work to increase my muscle strength. And then finally, when I came back on the field, I still have pain because I wasn't strong enough. And then from that, it was January, and they signed all the players. And then I spoke with Gary Brazil. He advised me to pass my coaching badges, which I've done. So I've done I passed my UFAB coach at St. George's Park. And then in the same, so it was during the summer, so 6 months after the January transfer window. And at the same time, one of my friends, so which is an ex-professional athlete also, we played together in Angers, my former team. He came to me with this project, so, and he talked to me about blood flow restriction training. So, and I was like, hold on a minute. So I show him a picture, because I've got a picture when I was walking with it at Nottingham Forest, and I say, this is what we work at. This is what we use at Nottingham Forest. He was like, yes, this is something like that I want us to build up, but automatically. And to explain why is blood flow training. So basically, it's a smart way to be able to increase muscle strength. So let's not talking about performance. Whatever, if you're in rehabilitation, you try to increase the muscle strength to be able to work better, to have better muscle functionality. If you're 60 years old or 70 years old, you're losing your muscle strength. The only way to increase your muscle strength is by doing exercise. But maybe at 60 or 70, you won't be able to do that. If you're in performance, like in a football club, for like Nottingham Forest at the moment, like let's take the example of Chris Cohen, for instance. Chris Cohen has some problem with his knee, and he was doing some big preseason, increasing the muscle strength on his knee. But because of lot of cardio, you're losing muscle strength because you do a lot of cardio, you're running a lot, so you're losing your strength. So therefore, after a month, 2 months, or 3 months, he starts to have pain in his knee because there is no more muscle to be able to absorb the impact on his joint. So for him, the aim to be able to carry on walking, he needed to lift heavy load in the objective of build up muscle strength. But then to lift heavy load, while using heavy load, he put pressure on his joint, so it's painful. So blood flow training is a smart way to have this cuff that would be around your limb. And then the devices that we build up will analyze the right pressure for an individual. So he will individualize the pressure. And then from that, he put a certain pressure on your limb to reduce the circulation of the blood. And then from that, you do an exercise. And then physiologically, by lifting, when you have this pressure on your limb and you add it with, let's say, a 10 kilogram weight, and you do an exercise, you will have, I try to exaggerate, but you will have the same physiologic benefit as lifting 70 kilograms, for example. Mm. But then you won't put pressure on your joint. So if we're talking about rehabilitation, you've been operated, you have an operation, you cannot lift heavy load because you're weak, but you still have able to be able to do a normal functional movement, then you add this on your leg and it will be similar as heavy load. So if you're in rehabilitation stage, or like Chris Cohen, you know, in rehabilitation, but you're in performance, but then you don't want to lose your muscle strength, otherwise you will start to have pain, then sometimes you can work on this. And then, for example, if you're a person that, as I said, 70 or 60 years old, you've never done sports, but then you start to lose your muscle autonomy. That's why our parents are elderly people. They gain old or they go to house scarces because they lose the muscle autonomy. But within this, you just have to do light load exercise within 5-6 minutes without dumbs, because you don't leave heavy load, so you won't break down the muscle fiber. So within 5 minutes, I would be able to give you the same benefit if you would have been between with a 100 kilogram, for example, for 45 minutes. So that's why we build up, and that's why I'm doing right now, to be honest.
And do you run this from Nottingham, or are you back in Paris now? Are you based in Nottingham still?
Yes. Now I'm in Nottingham, but so we're starting to commercialize the devices beginning of 2019. And so we use our network because we are 3 co-founders of the devices and 3 ex-professional footballers. So we have a network in the professional environment. So we use our network to be able to target the football club. So today we're working with big famous teams, famous teams such as Barcelona, PSG, Liverpool, Manchester United, Inter Milan, FC Porto, and so on. And so basically, it allowed us to go in an international market. So today, we're in 15 different European countries, and we also in Middle East, in North Africa, and we just enter also the North America. So we have the main company, which is in France, and we have the UK company also, which I run on my own. And yes, we are a little bit, I'm a little bit everywhere. So I'm based in Nottingham. So my main house is in Nottingham, but I keep traveling.
So you must really love Nottingham then. I mean, you could have gone back to Paris and lived the lifestyle there. I mean, Nottingham has a big place in your heart then still.
Yes, honestly, I'm like, the mentality is also, the English mentality is different than the French one. You know, it's, I won't know how to explain, but in French, we always grumpy. We never happy. You go in France, people always grumpy, unhappy. Even when you want to send them some nice energy, people are like that in every country. But I feel like in France is even more. And then all the French people, they will tell you the same. And then even English people, when they go to France and they ask people for a direction, they will always tell you, oh, French people, they're rude. Because when you ask them a question, they don't speak English and they just don't talk to you and they ignore you or whatever. That's French people.
Where do you consider yourself to be from then? I mean, you know, you grew up in France. You've spent a lot of time in Nottingham. I mean, are you Guy from Paris, or where do you think of yourself as from now?
I'm a citizen of the world. I love traveling. I love discovering new culture. I'm born in France, but I'm African and proud of it. My parents are born and raised in Cameroon, so I grew up in France, but with a strong, I would say Cameroonian background and Cameroonian education, and then I arrived here in UK and I buy to the UK education also, or to the people that I met here, and I met some American like Robbie Finlay, I met some English guy with a background of Jamaica like Wes Morgan, Kelvin Wilson, Louis McGugan, so I buy to understand also this kind of mentality, and then it was some also Irish people, some Scottish people. So I would say that the football allowed me to discover the world a little bit. I went to Helsinki and I met up some people from the Scandinavian country that they're different also. I met some friends that from Japan, and I also went to Japan for 2 weeks. So yes, I don't know. I believe that, I want to say that I'm a citizen of the world. Even if I'm French from Cameroon and English a little bit also. But yes, I'm a citizen of the world. We all are human.
Are you a, so these days, are you a businessman or are you a retired footballer? How, what would you put on your business card?
I'm not playing football professionally, but I never say that I'm retired because I want to put the fact that football was, professional football was just a bonus on what I love. What I love is football, and that doesn't matter if I'm professional or not. And I think, and then sometimes it's an advice that I give to the youngsters is don't get involved in the love of the game. Love the football, not the game. The minute you start to be involved too much in the game and the lifestyle of the game, then as soon as you're going to be disappointed, you will think that I don't love football. Football and the game of football is two different things. And if you want to say that I'm retired from the game of football, I'm retired from the game of football. But I will never be retired of football because it doesn't matter. Sometimes I play some Power League, or when I'm in France, we have something similar as Power League. It's called five-side football. And I'm guarantee you will see people that 55 years old, 60 years old, they come with the all the outfit, with the shin pass, the all outfit of Paris Saint-Germain, and they come inside the, you know, the pitch like the Neymar or something, and then when they're gonna pass the ball, they can't even pass the ball. And I love that. And I love that because they're the first one also that will tell you, come on, pass. They were looking at me. You can't control, you have to control the ball like that and pass the ball here. And you're like, yo, everybody is a coach there. Why you can't even play football? But it's funny. It's funny.
So do you still have a kickabout on Forest Rec then, pre-pandemic? You might go down and have a kickabout with, you know, your mates and everything.
So there is, I have two groups in Nottingham. Sorry, there is the Thursday night football with Jeremy Griffins, the doctor of Nottingham Forest, and some boys. So we always play together on the Thursdays sometimes. And there is another group of players, which is the Friday night football at Forest Field with Pat Samba Fitness. So it's a guy, a French guy, French Congolese guy from he's from France, and he came to UK also to Nottingham for a while back. He worked a lot with the community, and he organized some games with the people from the community every Friday around 8 to 10, something like that. So every time I'm around, I manage to go, and tomorrow there will be a game, so I will jump over there and play a little bit with them, you know.
I just wanted to finish by asking you a few quick fire Forest ones, if you don't mind, just to finish us off. What's your favourite Forest game?
Oh, Derby away. Derby away when we won 1-0. And
yeah.
Without a doubt, did this one.
I've gone off on a tangent now. I mean, what were the Derby games like? Then you talked about playing in France and there being 12,000 there for a decent Derby. Is it? It's a different world in England, is it?
It's different because... Big, and even I think even compared to the derbies nowadays, it's different because at the time we have Billy Davids that used to those I would say he didn't like the manager of Derby at the time.
Nigel Clough.
He didn't like Nigel Clough. Nigel Clough didn't like Billy Davids, and then we have Robbie Savage also. People have issue with Robbie Savage. And then we have Chris Commons, that used to be the superstar at Nottingham Forest that signed for Derby. So everybody hated him. And now we have to play against each other. And it was crazy. The atmosphere was crazy, crazy. And but yes, I remember the first thing that when I signed to the club, I remember the fans coming to me and say, hey, this date is the Derby. Do whatever you want. Lose some game in the league, not too much, but lose some game. But this one, you're not allowed. I said, like, whoa. And then on top of that, they tell me, you have to kick Chris Commons. If you kick, if you break Chris Commons' legs, then you're the legend of the club. I was like, what? The Derby was different. I miss that, though. I miss that.
Yeah, how would you have got on playing in front of empty crowds during the pandemic? You thrive on the crowds. Guess you wouldn't have actually enjoyed it much, would you, playing today?
Oh, it would have been horrible. I don't even watch football no more. Even I barely watch the Forest matches or follow the result because it's horrible. So I can't even imagine the player. Because as I said, I'm someone like when I go to the field and I'm listening this music of the city ground, and then I see all the fans singing together, I'm breathing this energy. I'm like, okay, let's go to the war. But now you don't have that.
Hmm.
Oh, it must be horrible.
Let me get back to those last couple of questions, the quick fire ones to finish us off. Who was the best player you played with in Forest?
The best player I played? That's a good question. I will stick to him, even though I play with a lot of good players. But then I always say that the one that gives me a real headache, because we play first against him before he come and sign for us, it was David McGoldrick.
Ah, okay, that's interesting.
But he used to play a different role, though. He used to play as a number 10 in between the lines. And at the time, when I arrived in UK, I feel like it was too much individual marking, which means if you're clever and you used to play against me or some of the French team that we play against, they would have popped the ball around you because you're just running everywhere. You're not compact. And I think at the time, when I play against him, he was a number 10, kind of a 9 plus, so a number 10. And it was always in my back. And it was the first time that when I arrived in UK, I've seen a player playing like French player, staying behind the pocket and stuff like that. So I was like, no, it was a big challenge. And when he came to the club, I was like, he's really a player that need to have the right coach to bring the best out of him. And then even today, I've seen him playing as a pure striker with Sheffield. But for me, when he used to play as a number 10, poof, he was amazing.
Last question. Who is your best friend at Forest?
Wow, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I was really close to everybody. I don't know, but I was hanging out a lot with Radim Majewski. I was good with Chris Cohen also, because Chris Cohen and Radim Majewski, we always used to be out first in the field and try to play two-touch game. All the time. Yes, I liked Wes Morgan, Kelvin Wilson, all of them, because basically they all welcomed me really well. And then up to today, I can give them a call and go to catch up with them. And they will pick up the phone, and we still all kind of close. We're not hanging out together because, you know, we have all personal reason, we have, you know, obligation or whatever. But then, like, even the physio, so they're not the player, but then the physio at the time, like Steve and Auntie, I keep on sending jokes to Steve Devine, which is the physio. Now he's a physio at Derby, so I always send him. I say, I can't believe that you betray us or this stuff. and then every time that we used to have a game, he used to have like a rugby game. So when French was playing against Ireland, we always texting each other. And so yes, it's recently Amy Sutton that used to you know the daughter of
Steve Sutton.
Yeah, Steve Sutton.
Yeah,
I was exchanging with her like a month ago.
Mm.
And so Keith Bird that bring me to Nottingham Forest, which was the sport director at the time, as she is like for him is like I'm his son, and for me one of like I would say. One of my parents, my parents here, you know, there is Jim King, for example, also. Jim King, he passed away. But then his wife, Hillary, I'm like, I need to go to see her because he's a wild. But then always in touch with them also.
Mm, yeah, he was like player liaison, I suppose it would be. So yeah. He helped all the players out, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, Guy, thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure speaking to you for so long. I'm grateful for your time. Hope everyone who's listened to that enjoyed it. And do like and subscribe on YouTube and give us a good review on iTunes. And anyone who watches this on Facebook, when I put it, I apologize for my lighting again. I'm still struggling to get to grips with that. But thanks everyone who watched along. We'll be back after the Easter games to talk about how Forest got on, and hopefully they're one step closer to securing their championship status for next season. Guy, thank you again. Really enjoyed that. It was really interesting.
and we'll catch everyone soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening.